This is Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
JBL Tour Pro 3 earbuds are for those who don't conform to the standard.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get into some touchscreen technology, how about the smart charging case, clear sound? These are not standard things. You're only going to get them with the JBL Tour Pro 3, baby.
And I love the sound of JBL when it goes, boom, boom. These earbuds are packed with innovation because you can't stand out by following others.
Touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control, instant EQ customization, true adaptive noise canceling, and the one-of-a-kind audio transmitter, which can plug and play with everything from game consoles to in-flight entertainment. What more could you want? First doesn't follow. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Follow the Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts to listen to our episodes early and ad-free and get access to monthly exclusive episodes. Go to patreon.com/madnesspod. You can also hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts for ad-free episodes. We've got links in our show notes.
The opinions expressed in the following episode do not necessarily reflect those of the Minds of Madness podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
In the early morning hours of October 4th, 2009, a quiet town in New Hampshire was shattered by a brutal and senseless attack, leaving a mother dead and her daughter gravely injured. The motive for this gruesome home invasion was chillingly absent, leaving investigators to classify it as a thrill kill. But as police dug deeper into the case, they uncovered a disturbing revelation. The perpetrators of the horrific attack were a group of teenage outcasts driven by a dark and twisted ideology. Join me now as we look into a crime so random and shocking, it's the kind of night horror movies are based on. You'll hear about a former Boy Scout who recruited three friends into his cult of insanity and the triumphant comeback of an 11-year-old karate kid who survived the night. ...21-year-old Cash for Gold employee Christy had been trained not to ask too many questions when it came to where sellers stumbled upon the items they brought in. So on October 4th, 2009, when two teenage boys showed up beaming as brightly as the gold they were hawking, she accepted their story at face value. At least on the surface. She wasn't fully buying the fistful of jewelry they'd brought in had been purchased at a yard sale for $20. 17-year-old Steven Spader and 19-year-old Christopher Gribble weren't exactly strangers to Christy. She knew the boys from around their New Hampshire hometown. Christy had met Steven a few years prior, and Christopher was a recurring customer who'd brought things in to sell before. In fact, just a week or two prior, he tried selling items he claimed belonged to his recently deceased grandmother. On that particular morning, the boys brought in a necklace, ring, bracelet, and earrings, which Christy valued at $130. After the boys left with their cash and Christy finished her shift, it seemed like just another ordinary day. Until later, when a knock came at her door. It was a Milford police detective, and he had some questions for her, particularly about the boys who'd visited the Cash for Gold shop earlier that day, Stephen and Christopher. And he wanted details, what time they'd arrived, how long they stayed, what were they wearing, what they sold, and the amount she'd paid for them. 1 year later, Christy would find herself answering the exact same questions all over again when she took the stand to testify in one of the most heinous murder trials New Hampshire had ever seen. Because the boys who'd stopped in to cash for gold that day to sell jewelry hadn't bought it from a yard sale as they claimed. They'd stolen it from a woman. A woman they'd just murdered 7 hours earlier with a machete and knife in her own home while she slept. Born on March 6, 1967, in Toledo, Ohio, Kimberly Pisacki radiated warmth and kindness from an early age, paving her path to a career in healthcare. After graduating with a nursing degree from Pima Community College in Tucson, Arizona, Kim became a registered nurse at Tucson Medical Center. When she was 30, she married the love of her life, David Cates, in 1997, and a year later, their daughter Jamie Lynn was born. The little family would eventually move to Baltimore, Maryland, where Kim worked as an RN at St. Agnes Hospital before they settled down in the little New England town of Mount Vernon, New Hampshire, in 2004. A small sought-after town to raise a family because of its known safety. Remarkably, the town had only encountered a single instance of violent crime throughout the early 2000s, the tragic murder of two Dartmouth college professors. A heinous act perpetrated by two teenage boys looking to steal money to fund a trip to Australia. In New Hampshire, Kimberly was a pediatric nurse at St. Joseph's Hospital, swiftly earning the admiration from her peers for her natural affinity and skill in caring for children. David, Kimberly's husband, worked as an engineer at BAE Systems, a company known for its cutting-edge defense, aerospace, and security solutions worldwide. It was a demanding job that had David traveling quite a lot, close to 30 times a year. When Kimberly wasn't working or at her daughter's school events, she'd often be seen enjoying a jog around Mount Vernon or spending time with her family. As for Jamie, her days were packed with school and extracurricular activities like soccer, field hockey, and karate. Jamie treasured moments with her mom, especially when her dad was away. In fact, it wasn't uncommon for Jamie to snuggle up to her mom on her dad's side of the bed when he was out of town. And on October 3rd, 2009, it was no different. David was away on business, and he texted Kimberly that Saturday evening to let her know he was done for the day. It had been a long day for him, and he knew his wife and daughter were going to bed soon and didn't want to disturb them. Although Mount Vernon had a reputation for its safety, the Cates home was fairly remote, and Kimberly was meticulous about locking it up at night. But what the Cates hadn't accounted for was the possibility of someone finding another way into their home. 1 month before the most brutal home invasion in New Hampshire's history, 17-year-old high school dropout Stephen Spader was growing restless. He wanted to feel a sense of belonging with a group of like-minded individuals. Stephen had made attempts to gain credibility among his peers by bragging about fictitious gang affiliations and fabricating tales of murder. But nobody was buying it. Instead, Stephen just wound up looking like a desperate teenager, trying to gain recognition through sensationalistic stories. Eventually, Stephen did manage to form a small group of like-minded friends, three other teen boys, who all seemed to share a mutual enthusiasm for death and destruction. Christopher Gribble, Billy Marks, and Quinn Glover. They bonded over their admiration for serial killers and considered themselves juggalos or fans of the Insane Clown Posse. At some point, Stephen decided to rally his band of misfit friends into a collective he believed would carry significance. A group he dubbed the Disciples of Destruction, or DOD. Appointing himself leader, Steven even created a logo and assigned Quinn Glover to research the Zodiac Killer for inspiration. When Quinn reported back that the Zodiac Killer's randomness helped him evade law enforcement, it seemed to spark something in Steven. He'd considered robberies, destruction, and violence, but by the fall of 2009, he'd solidified his initiation for the disciples. Murder. A day before their attack, Billy and Steven would scout for the perfect location, and they found their spot. In the early morning hours of October 4th, 2009, the teen boys drove to the nearby town of Mount Vernon to execute their plan. In the car, Steven turned to the others and said, "We're about to do the most evil thing this town has ever seen." As they slowly rolled down the long, dark dirt road Steven and Billy had scouted out the day before, the boys initially considered targeting a large home they'd come across. But they decided instead to turn their attention to the home just next door, a two-level ranch-style home, the home of David, Kimberly, and Jamie Cates. The road they were traveling down was Tro Road, an isolated and wooded section of town, precisely the reason they'd chosen it. The boys had no idea who'd be inside the home or if it would be empty. Their only real criteria was to make sure it was remote enough that if someone were inside, no one would be close enough to hear their screams. At around 4 a.m., the four teens exited the vehicle and dashed around the Cates family residence, looking for a way in. 30 minutes later, it was still dark out when the boys finally located a small basement window they decided would be their point of entry. Because the window was so small, Billy Marks, the smallest of the group, weighing only 97 pounds at the time, was assigned to the job of squeezing through after Christopher smashed it. The group then shimmied up the plastic side support of where the air conditioner unit sat, so Steven Spader could also squeeze through. But before going inside, Steven scrawled "Die" on the Cates patio. Once inside, Steven opened the door so his co-assailants could enter. Although all four boys were carrying weapons, only Steven and Christopher would be the ones to carry out the attack on Kimberly and Jamie while they were sleeping side by side in the master bedroom.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it, your neighbors know it, heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
By 5:30 a.m. that morning, Steven and Christopher were already bragging to their friend, Autumn Savoy, about what they'd done, and he couldn't believe his ears.
I was looking at him, and I was like, "What do you want?" And he's like, "Nothing, I'm just amped. I mean, I've got a massive adrenaline rush right now." I was like, "Why?" He's like, "Oh, we just killed two people." Like, he said it really nonchalantly, and being Steve and his stories previously, I was like, "Yeah, okay." I didn't believe a word of what he said.
Steven told Autumn, "I love you like a brother, but if you tell anyone, I'll effing kill you." Although Autumn had refused to participate in the invasion, it now appeared he was game to help them out with the cover-up.
Chris wrapped the bag of clothes and was carrying it. And Steve and I knew the path pretty well because that's where we used to go and smoke weed. And so we went down there. Steve and Chris were trying to decide who was going to throw the stuff into the river. And Steve's like, Autumn, why don't you just throw it in? And I was like, all right. I was extremely disturbed as to the story which they were telling me. I became very, very nervous because from the detail, it just seemed to be incredibly real.
Autumn joined Christopher and Steven at the Nashua River, where they dumped incriminating evidence, bloody clothes, shoes, and some of the stolen items from the Cates home. As for the murder weapons, well, they didn't want to dispose of them just yet, because they planned on using them again. So instead of dumping the machete and knife in the river, they buried them in the woods near Christopher's home. Exhausted, but still on a high from their night of destruction, the boys headed home to sleep. Later that evening, Christopher and Steven headed out again, this time to a mutual friend's home, Kyle Fenton. As they'd done with Autumn, the boys bragged to Kyle about what they'd done, which by that point was already being reported all over the local news. But what surprised them was to hear the 11-year-old they'd attacked was still alive. What they also didn't realize was while they boasted about their attack, Kyle's mother was eavesdropping. The next morning, she made a beeline to the local police station to report what she'd overheard. Christopher Gribble was born into a family of devout Mormons and homeschooled from a young age. But by age 16, he was accused of sexually touching a woman at a store and later again a woman at his family's church. This is when his parents decided to have him speak to a church counselor, where he divulged a secret desire to kill his parents. The counselor's advice to Christopher's parents was to have him undergo psychiatric treatment, which is when he first met Dr. Grace Tallarico in 2007. After expressing thoughts of homicidal ideation, Dr. Grace Tallarico referred him to Dr. Alan Gladson for psychological testing, who confirmed Christopher was demonstrating antisocial and sociopathic traits. Dr. Gladstone's recommendation was for Christopher to undergo long-term psychotherapy. But because of Christopher's age, this information was never disclosed to his parents. In the coming years, people who knew Christopher would claim he often talked about wanting to torture and kill his mother in various ways. And in 2008, he went to live with another family from the church. Things had come to a head with his family after his mother found a pornographic video in his bedroom. Christopher claimed his mother had planted it there. Nevertheless, for the next 7 months, he lived with friends from the church, the Burgess family. Ramona Burgess describes Christopher's socially awkward behavior that she observed.
It was definitely awkward. I mean, girls came and then they stopped coming. He seemed to be just so intense with them. And he was always falling in love with someone. And that made the girls really uncomfortable.
Ramona also described Christopher as the loneliest teenager she'd ever met and as someone who craved attention. Eventually, Christopher would move back home, but his relationship with his parents continued to be strained. As an avid Facebooker, Christopher once made a post titled, 25 Random Things About Me, where he stated that he liked swords, knives, and daggers. He also wrote, "Although everyone has a light and dark side, mine is very extreme. If I like you, or at least don't dislike you, I'm the sweetest, nicest person ever. But heaven help you if I truly lose it. It's not pretty." At the same time, Christopher also boasted, "I'm a gentleman to a fault. I would never, ever hit a girl, and I do that whole open doors, ladies first thing, no matter if hardly anyone appreciates it anymore." Christopher's friend, Steven Spader, was born in 1990 and grew up in Brookside, in the same town as Christopher. Adopted into a middle-class family as an infant, According to court documents, Stephen tested positive for both marijuana and cocaine at birth. But despite his rocky start, Stephen's adoptive parents were loving and supportive. At times, the young Boy Scout showed behavior that indicated he was somewhat manipulative and cunning. But there wasn't much cause for concern until Stephen entered middle school. That's when Stephen first seemed to struggle keeping friends. And when his attempts to manipulate them failed, it only furthered his sense of frustration and isolation. But Stephen's parents were determined to get him help. In fact, they even took out an equity loan on their home so they'd be able to send him to an exclusive behavioral facility for teens. By 2008, Stephen was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and he started smoking marijuana, using cocaine, and taking pills. It was around that time that he rekindled his friendship with Christopher Gribble, who he met in Boy Scouts as a child. It's difficult to say what might have happened if they never reconnected, if they hadn't had each other to ignite the other's dark thoughts, to come up with such an empty, evil-fueled plan that would get them arrested within hours of their crime. After Kimberly and Jamie were attacked in the early hours of October 4th, Jamie managed to crawl her way to a phone and dial 911. Sergeant Kevin Furlong was one of the first responding officers to arrive at the scene.
I saw a young girl laying on the floor. I observed that she was completely covered in blood from her head to her toe. I observed that she had major injuries and major trauma, to include lacerations to her face, extremities, as well as I observed that part of her foot was missing. I told her that I was a police officer, I was there to help. She then said in a whisper while shaking that she thought her mommy was dead.
Heartbreakingly, Jamie was right. Her mother had died from her injuries. She wouldn't learn to what extent until later. The second officer to arrive at the scene was Eric Wales, who asked Jamie what had happened.
I asked her how this happened. She said that those guys in the house, one of them had a knife and the other one had a bat, and he hit my mom.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it. Your neighbors know it. Heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
When Officer Wales asked Jamie if she could describe her attackers, she could only describe one of them as bald. When it came to a motive for the attack, she did overhear them talking about taking jewelry. Despite being in critical condition, Jamie was able to tell the officers that her father was away on business and then provided him with his cell phone number. But after Jamie was taken away in an ambulance, investigators were left with very little to work with. Jamie couldn't identify her attackers, and the evidence left at the crime scene wouldn't be much help either. Inside the Cates home, a forensic team couldn't even come up with a single fingerprint, and the tire track left in the dirt on Tro Road wasn't much to go on either. But what no one could have predicted at the time was that the lack of evidence wouldn't be a problem for very long. Thanks to Stephen and Christopher's inability to keep their mouths shut. Within 24 hours, thanks to their friend Kyle's mom reporting their confession to police, all four teens were arrested on October 5th. When Christopher Gribble was first questioned, he denied having any involvement in the murder of Kimberly Cates, let alone the attack against Jamie.
you know, you're saying that you don't have any information regarding the specifics about it, but it's obvious that someone is dead.
Yeah.
And that a young girl is, you know, according to the newspaper, in, what did they say, stable?
They said stable condition, but my dad being an EMT, that could mean anything from she's in a coma, but she's not going to die, to she's up awake and perfectly happy, go lucky. So for all I know, they got into a car accident and you're looking for the car. But assuming that somebody specifically tried to kill them, like, that rubs against my conscience. Personally, I'm one of those type of gentlemanly, chivalry sort of guys that you don't even hit girls, let alone you go out and treat them badly. And if the girl's in the hospital, obviously she probably got injured or something.
Chris, it's funny you should mention that, because I want to let you know, she is going to survive, fortunately.
That's good.
Yeah, that is real good, because it's real good because she deserves to be alive, and so does her mother.
Yeah, so does
the lady, I'm sure. But you know what else is good? It's good because she can ID the two people that
were good
in the house.
That'd be awesome. I hope you guys can do that.
The detective then goes on to ask Christopher if he thinks the death penalty would be a suitable punishment for someone murdering a mother and seriously injuring a child.
I would say they should probably at least go to prison for the rest of their lives. If the jury decides the death penalty, I probably wouldn't disagree with that. Because it really goes against me to harm a woman in general.
Mm-hmm.
But a little girl, and from what I understand, she's about 10 years old. Come on.
She's 11.
She's 11.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's like, how could you do that to someone that young?
Oh, I agree.
Like,
I talked to her, and you know, she doesn't understand either.
No.
And what would you do if Steve put you in a position, a pretty hairy predicament? What would you do? Would you stop him? Or would you follow him?
I would stop him.
And deal with the consequences later.
I would definitely stop him. Because I don't put up with stuff from anyone to a certain degree. If he's going to smoke cigarettes and he's almost 18, I don't care.
We're not talking smoking cigarettes.
Oh, yeah.
We're not talking drinking beer if you're underage.
No, I'm just using
I'm talking serious stuff.
Chris, you don't get it, do you? You're a very smart person. You're sitting here talking to us. I'm looking at you and listening to what's coming out of your mouth. You're a very smart and intelligent person. But I don't think you really get the big picture. You are here for a reason. Okay, you were sitting there minimizing things, talking about smoking cigarettes. We're talking about a homicide here. There is a dead woman and there is a little girl that has been seriously injured, and you're talking about cigarettes. You want to know what the other guys are talking about? They're not talking about cigarettes. So you better start thinking really hard and pull your head out of your behind and start telling us what happened on Saturday night, because it's not looking very good for you. Right now, there is a train coming down the track, and you are on the track. Do you see where I'm going with that? Your story doesn't fit. Your buddies are telling us something different. People are talking about something different than what you are telling us. This was Saturday night. This wasn't 3 months ago Saturday night. This was Saturday night. It is Monday right now.
After being grilled by detectives for over a 7-hour period, Christopher finally changed his tune and eventually admitted to not only attacking Jamie, but helping to murder Kimberly as well. Details which were incredibly graphic and disturbing.
This is a continuation of the interview that we ended maybe 45 minutes or so ago. Is it true that you've come to me and told me you'd like to talk again?
Yes, I would.
Okay.
For the main reason that it was a conspiracy.
Okay.
Saturday morning,
when I was with Steve. I'd already planned on being with my girlfriend that evening at her brother's birthday party and so on. He told me that him and Billy had been cruising around and had found a house out in Mount Vernon that looked reasonable enough. It was out in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And we were thinking we were going to go in there. When it was just me and him together in the car.
You and him meaning?
Me and Steve.
Okay.
In the car. He said, yeah, we're just going to go in there, grab some stuff. If anybody's there, we're going to kill him, have some fun. I agreed. We could do that. That sounded good. And he said that he would text me, but we could meet at Walmart at around midnight that night. And we'd go out and do it.
Okay.
Billy was in on it, too. He was all for it. We all had pocket knives. Mm-hmm. I had found a machete that my father owned. And Steve had mentioned he liked machetes, so I brought it along.
Okay.
And there is a Boy Scout knife, a straight knife, about 4 or 5 inches long.
Okay.
Thin blade. I liked it. It had a very nice handle, and it had a leather case that could go on your belt.
Yep.
So I chose that.
After driving out to Tow Road, Christopher indicated that they settled on breaking into the Cates home, and once they did, had made their way to the breaker panel inside, where they turned off all the power to the entire home. Christopher then said they walked around the home until they came across an iPod, which they decided to use as a mini flashlight.
We went towards the master bedroom, using the iPod as a light. Steve had the machete, I had the Boy Scout knife out. Steven was in the front, I was right behind him. Quinn and Billy were in the rear.
Okay, so all four of you went together?
All four of us were together the entire time. When Steven opened the master bedroom door quietly, he looked in, and he said that there are people, but we thought he said, there's no people.
Mm-hmm.
So he started to get a little bit relaxed and started talking, started to quiet us down. Then he shined the light on the bed, and that's when they woke up.
Okay.
The mother said something like, Jane, is that you? Steve threw the light. He went around to one side of the bed where the girl apparently was sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
I started to circle around to the other side in case something happened. And Billy and Quinn stayed by the door. Quinn, it was either Quinn or Billy, said later that they closed the door just in case.
Mm-hmm.
The mom sat up in the bed, started asking who was there, what was going on, tried to turn on the lamp, and it didn't turn on.
Yep.
When she did that, Steve started hacking at the bed with the machete.
Okay.
They started screaming because they heard something. Apparently he missed them mostly. But I heard him hit the mom. And so I dove in and stabbed her a few times in the chest.
Oh.
Probably 2 or 3.
Yep.
Pretty sure it was 3. She started gurgling. Steve was just hacking away. He totally lost it. I was controlled, but I didn't really feel much of anything.
Yep. Okay.
I thought I would, but I didn't.
What were Quinn and Billy doing?
They stayed by the door. Okay. They didn't do anything. Almost did. We did everything. The girl jumped up. I almost sensed her in the dark get up and jumped over her mother. And Steve was hacking away and she jumped right into my arms. I stabbed her once towards the face.
Mm-hmm.
I hit bone. I felt the knife skip off and didn't go in. Then I went for the front. I stabbed her somewhere on the front right chest area. I tried to twist her around so I could get a better shot at her heart. It was automatic.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even think about it. I automatically did it.
Yeah.
I stabbed her a couple times in the back as I was swinging her around, and she got free of my hand and went flying into the glass door, knocked her head, stopped crying completely.
Okay.
I figured she was probably toast.
Yeah.
The mom was still gurgling and kind of breathing deeply. Steve just went at it. I was actually kind of scared of him. He just kept hacking at the bed, came over to our side and hacked at it some more.
Yeah.
And then went over and kicked the girl a couple times with the steel-toe boots, and then hit her in the head with the machete. At least that's... So he said he didn't aim for that.
Yeah.
I was backing off because I knew Steve was losing. I could tell. Then he turned around, he looked like Jason from Halloween with a machete in his hand. And I told him, Steve, relax, it's just me, it's Chris. He was breathing hard, relaxed. And Quinn had the good sense to go turn the breakers back on and the lights on.
Yeah.
The mom was obviously not going to make it. The girl I was pretty sure wasn't going to. She was completely out, there was blood all over the place.
Christopher would go on to describe in even more gruesome detail how Stephen continued to attack Kimberly, even when she was clearly deceased. Although Christopher claimed he didn't check to see if Jamie was deceased, he said he assumed she was. He then said all four of them searched the Cates home for jewelry before leaving.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it. Your neighbors know it. Heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
When Billy Marks and Quinn Glover were interrogated, both denied knowing that the plan even involved killing anyone. Quinn claimed he was shocked people were even inside the house.
I guess I didn't believe it was really happening. I was shocked that people were home. I was shocked that this was actually happening, and I walked down the hallway because I didn't want to face the reality.
Billy Marks claimed he was only there to help with the robbery and to make some money.
I would never tell anybody, obviously. So I wasn't planning on it. I was just in there I just wanted to make some quick money. But when we're there, I thought the same. I honestly can't even tell you what their intentions were. That they had a plan if they confronted somebody, didn't they? I guess so. Did they tell you what that plan was if they confronted somebody? I heard. Well, then yes, I did, but they told me that if there were people in the house, that they would have them all in use chloroform, the cord, whatever. That's, good stuff. That's what I thought would be happening. But when did they tell you that? Probably the day or two before, maybe. Not even. So, you had discussed a burglary ahead of time. Not that specific.
When Autumn Savoy was questioned by the police, he initially provided an alibi for the boys, telling investigators they'd spent the night at his house. He'd later turn out to be a forthcoming informant, leading police to the river where they found Kimberly's husband's wallet. They'd also find a sweatshirt with Stephen's name on it and clothing items labeled with Christopher's name. It seems sometimes even murderous masterminds forget to remove the labels their moms attached to their things. While speaking with detectives, Autumn would also reveal that Stephen often spoke about wanting to kill people. In fact, he said he specifically talked about wanting to murder his mother, just like Christopher Gribble had.
Steve had always talked about doing shootings and killing people, and said he'd killed a lot of people, and he had got a lot of respect on the streets and whatever. And he'd always said he wanted to kill someone to know what it felt like. I never took it as anything more than, the ramblings of a troubled kid. Steve had mentioned in the past that he wanted to kill his mom. because there was a lot of animosity between them, because she degraded him in his opinion. He was thinking very seriously and discussing with Chris Gribble about murdering his mother.
It was when police started canvassing local pawn shops that they confirmed with Christy at Cash for Gold that Christopher and Steven had been by with some items. This was also confirmed in mall security footage, and also because the boys had helpfully left their name and contact info after selling the jewelry at the pawn shop. Although Steven was widely seen as the ringleader in the thrill kill, the statements Christopher made during trial proved he was just as cold-blooded, if not more. He confessed to feeling nothing, even boasting about being a more methodical murderer of the two, saying that while Steven swung his machete recklessly, he wielded his knife with precision. Quinn would later testify that Steven had initially hatched even more perverse plans for the attack.
He talked about eating people, roasting people, putting heads on stakes, making scenes for the press. It was...
Did he ever use the term sleeping over?
He did, sir.
And what did you take that to mean, sleeping over people's houses?
Staying over the night with the bodies, making a scene, doing things, like eating.
At trial, Christopher's father confirmed that the machete and knife used in the attack had come from their home. In total, Kimberly had suffered 32 injuries to multiple parts of her body by both weapons. The medical examiner would later go on to explain how Kimberly ultimately died.
And she died as a result of all of these wounds causing bleeding, essentially exsanguination, which means loss of blood. So she died as a result of these multiple sharp injuries that affected her head, her neck, her torso, her left arm, and her left leg.
So to be clear, it wasn't just one wound that killed Kim Cates. It was a combination of many wounds.
Many wounds. I mean, obviously, some are very superficial, and if she had only sustained those, then she would have survived. But there are several that are perforating vital organs, transecting and severing major vessels that would have contributed to this loss of blood and loss of organ function.
Again, for the record, how many wounds did Kim Cates have on his body?
32 in all.
Was he alive for every single one of those wounds?
Yes.
Every single one he was alive
for? They're all causing what's called a vital reaction. So bleeding in the tissues surrounding the wound, internal bleeding. They look very different from the wounds I make. When I do a post-mortem examination, I use a scalpel. I don't see the same tissue reaction when I make my incisions.
She was alive the whole time.
Yes.
Those are all the questions I have, Your Honor.
Kimberly's mother would confirm at trial that she'd originally given Kimberly the jewelry that the boys later pawned at Cash for Gold for safekeeping for Jamie to wear one day. Heartbreakingly, David Cates, Kimberly's husband and Jamie's father, described the plans the two of them had for the weekend before they were attacked.
They had some shopping plans and just hanging out together. They spent an awful lot of time together and, just being a mom and a daughter, you know.
Kim and Jamie close?
They were very close. They spent a lot of time together.
What kinds of things would they do while you were away on these trips? You said you were gone about half the time of the year.
Yeah, Jamie was involved in school. Kim was part of that, as well as, shopping and just hanging out, go to the movies, go to the mall. Normal mom and daughter things. They were also very involved with karate at the time. That was a big part of Jamie's life, and Kim was going to the karate studio quite often with her.
When you were away, was it unusual for Kim and Jamie to sleep in the same room together?
Not unusual at all.
At the end of the trial, Steven Spader was found guilty of first-degree murder as well as attempted murder, earning an automatic life sentence without parole. And the judge had these remarks for him.
Based on all of the above, I could go on for days and days and days about the depth of your depravity, but it is sufficient to say that you belong in a cage. For that reason, I am sentencing you consecutively to the maximum penalties which apply to your remaining convictions to ensure that you stay in that cage for the rest of your pointless life.
Although Christopher Gribble admitted to the murder, he tried to plead insanity. During his insanity trial, Christopher described the murder calmly, cheerfully, and with a curious case of upspeak. When he approached the shocking parts of his story, he attempted to sound like he had an out-of-body experience or some other detached reaction beyond his control.
At that point, I don't remember thinking anything for a little while. It got really weird. And I'm going to have a little trouble describing it because I've never felt that way before. But Steve immediately tossed the iPod and went down on the floor and headed for the right-hand side of the bed. The next thing I knew, I was walking towards the other side of the bed. I don't remember thinking I should go over to the other side. It was just like I knew without having to consider what I should do.
But as Christopher continued on with his testimony, it became clear he was enjoying the attention and relished reliving the memories with fondness.
I don't remember when I pulled the knife out from the sheath. At some point it was in my hand. I don't remember when I pulled it out. I remember realizing that it was in my hand, but I don't remember pulling it out. I went to the other side, and by the time I got to that side of the bed, I remember the girl woke up on the right-hand side of the bed. I don't remember exactly what she said. I remember the feeling that she was groggy, but that's all I really remember about it. She might have said something like mommy or something like that. And then Steve just started hacking at the bed.
At the conclusion of Christopher's trial, his insanity plea was rejected.
Mr. Gribble, would you please stand and face the jury? And the foreman, please stand. Mr. Foreman, has the jury reached a verdict?
Yes, we have.
I'll stay you, Mr. Foreman, on indictment 10S230, charging Christopher Gribble with first-degree murder for knowingly causing the death of Kimberly Case. Do you find him not guilty by reason of insanity or guilty?
We, the jury, find him guilty.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
When it comes to broccoli salad, Ohio, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. Everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows that tangy zip. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip in all your favorite recipes. Buy now and get your tang on, Ohio.
At his sentencing, the jurors made an unprecedented move by returning to the jury box to face him down, with some simply staring while others smiled. When considering the mitigating factors that informed the judge's decision, she had this to say.
I am not going to go into the bottomless aggravating factors that exist in this case, but I believe the record will thoroughly support my belief that infinity is not enough jail time for you. Accordingly, you are sentenced on the remaining convictions to the maximum penalty allowed by law to be served consecutively.
In the end, Christopher received the same sentence as Stephen, life. Billy Marks and Quinn Glover were sentenced to 30 to 60 years and 20 to 40 years respectively as accomplices. But it would be David Cates, Kimberly's husband, that would have the final word when he gave this victim impact statement.
It has been, I believe, my duty as a husband and a father
to be here for every moment of these trials, to represent my daughter, Jamie, who deserves to feel safe in the world she lives in, and to represent my wife, Kim, who was taken from us coldly, brutally, and without reason. In this courtroom, I have listened to the accounts of Kim's murder, one excruciating detail after the next. Through these accounts, I have heard my wife's last breath. I have listened to my child's screams. I have watched as Jamie's perfect little body was mutilated and tortured. I don't have any illusions that this invasion to the sanctity of our home will ever be behind us, that Jamie and I will ever be able to go more than a few moments without remembering that Kim isn't with us, or the horrific way in which she was taken from us.
With a resilience that outmatches her assailants' combined efforts, Jamie Cates has triumphed over the four teenage boys who left her for dead. In a testament to the power of perseverance, Jamie has forged a thriving career in healthcare, following in her mother's footsteps, and today is surrounded by a network of unwavering love and support. 10 years after the attack, Jamie spoke at an annual golf tournament in memory of her mother. Spirited, full of joy, and motivated to raise money for the Kimberly Cates Memorial Fund, which has given out over $250,000 in scholarships, Jamie spoke these words to the press.
I am studying public health. We are on the home stretch, just about to graduate. I have an internship. Yeah, we're playing field hockey at UNCW. That's fun. I just started that up again. Just living every day like it's the last, right?
In 2011, David Cates appeared in front of the New Hampshire House to publicly back the Kimberly Cates Bill, a bill that would expand New Hampshire's capital punishment statute to include murder during a home invasion.
The events that took place during those early morning hours in the sanctity of our home is the perfect, clear-cut example of why this bill should be added to the New Hampshire law. If you need a reason to support this bill, close your eyes and remember the last moments of my wife's life. Imagine her not knowing if her daughter and best friend was alive or dead.
In June 2011, the Kimberly Cates Law was passed. And now I'd like to introduce the podcast, Mortal Musings.
Lads, do you enjoy getting traumatized on a weekly basis? Well, neither does my co-host Neil.
People call me a victim more than a co-host.
Anyway, welcome to the Mortal Musings podcast. I'm your host, Megan. Each week, we dive into some truly dark and disturbing cases. Do you ever find yourself listening to these horrific tales and saying to yourself,
huh? No.
Huh?
Well, the actual f***. Why? Why did he do that? Solved it, mate. There's no need for that. They're just acting the b***s.
Our episodes include cases of serial killers, the story of a socialite that was held captive for 25 years, prison riots, wrongful executions, and scandals in the death industry. At the end of each episode, we throw in a tale of oddity. Anything from medical mishaps to the real-life Weekend at Bernie's or Mike the Headless Chicken. New episodes every Wednesday. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
And remember, here at the Mortal Musings podcast, we like to take the cases seriously, but not ourselves.
Follow the Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. To support the show and get access to ad-free episodes, extra content, and Patreon-exclusive episodes, go to patreon.com/madnesspod. To find us on Instagram and Facebook, search The Minds of Madness, and on Twitter using the handle @madnesspod. And also, by checking out our sponsors and using our promo codes, you're also helping support the show. We've got all the links in our episode notes. So until next week, thanks for listening.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it, your neighbors know it, heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs, in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.